translation. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied to Prakasananda Saraswati, "My dear sir, kindly hear the reason. My spiritual master considered me a fool, and therefore he chastised me." Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. When Prakasananda Saraswati inquired from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu why he neither studied Vedanta nor performed meditation, Lord Chaitanya presented himself as a number one fool in order to indicate that the present age, Kali Yuga, is an age of fools and rascals in which it is not possible to obtain perfection simply by reading Vedanta philosophy and meditating. The Shastras strongly recommend Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasti Eva Nasti Eva Nasti Eva Gatir Anyata. In this age of quarrel and hypocrisy, the only means of deliverance is the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. There is no other way, there is no other way, there is no other way. People in general in Kali Yuga are so fallen that it is not possible for them to obtain perfection simply by studying the Vedanta Sutra. One should therefore seriously take to the constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord. Translation, once again. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied to Prakashananda Saraswati, "My dear sir, kindly hear the reason. My spiritual master considered me a fool, and therefore he chastised me." Om Gyana Thirunandasya Gyachanjana Shalakaya Chaksorum Litam Jaina Tasme Shri Gurave Namaha. So this is a very interesting part of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Lord Chaitanya is in conversation with one of the biggest Mayavadi preachers or sannyasis at his time. It's a part of the Bhagavatam where, sorry, it's a part of the Chaitanya Charitamrita where Lord Chaitanya is really fulfilling his desire to transform the hearts of the hardest of those philosophers in India at that time. And they were steeped in a philosophy of impersonalism. And they were the whole philosophy of impersonalism is also permeated with a sense of pride and great ego. The philosophers at that time used to be so steeped in the way of practice that anybody who came with any other philosophy, they'd find a way to refute it, that somehow use the teachings of actually Sankaracharya in such a way that they would just really push down, nail down anybody who came with any other philosophy. So it was Lord Chaitanya's very challenging task to, well, maybe perhaps not so challenging for him, to somehow win their hearts over. And this whole incident was taking place in Benares, Varanasi. And Varanasi was really the city where the all the Mayavadis used to gather. That was their stronghold as such. And it was a regular thing that when they would see anybody who was not studying Vedanta, not following it in their line of practice, they would become very critical. So similarly, they would, when Lord Chaitanya first arrived on the scene in Benares, they were very critical of him. And two of Lord Chaitanya's followers, Tapan Mishra and Keshishwara Pandit, were both frustrated because they'd have to listen to these sannyasis criticizing Lord Chaitanya. And they just didn't know how to deal with it. And they were constantly saying to Lord Chaitanya, you know, what should we do? What shall we do? How shall we deal with this? And Lord Chaitanya simply smiled because he had a particular plan. And in fact, Lord Chaitanya's plan for taking sannyas and particularly losing his beautiful long hair as Nimai Pandit was to really address this. This was almost the crux of the group of people, one group of people that he really wanted to transform and change their hearts. So in this particular episode, one brahmana had invited all the sannyasis to come for lunch, and he had also invited Lord Chaitanya, and it was an opportune time for Lord Chaitanya to interact with these sannyasis. Lord Chaitanya's attitude was very much of humility. He wasn't out there with a hammer and stick to change them, but he wanted to change their hearts. So it was a very softly approach as such. So first he arrived at the place, he washed his hands and feet, and he sat in the place which a sannyasi would normally not sit in. And Lord Chaitanya naturally had an effulgence, and yesterday's verse was that you look as, Prakashananda Saraswati Thakur was saying, you look as brilliant as if you were Narayan himself. Will you kindly explain the reason that you have adopted the behavior of a lower class people? So Prakashananda Saraswati was the head of the sannyasis, and he was asking two questions. On one side, you're so pure and you're so advanced and you're so bright. You're almost at that place that we're all striving to get to. You're Narayan. His philosophy was that you are Narayan himself. But at the same time, why are you sitting in such a dirty place on the steps where you know sannyasis would not sit? Only lower class people would sit. So this was a perfect opportunity for Lord Chaitanya to respond and somehow capture the heart of Prakashananda Saraswati. So his response was, my dear sir, kindly hear the reason. My spiritual master considered me a fool, and therefore he chastised me. So this is the beginning of this whole episode where Lord Chaitanya is already sitting in a lowly place on those steps, and then he's saying, well, actually, I'm a nobody. I'm a fool. I'm just simply following the words of my spiritual master, my teacher. So very instructive for us. Perhaps the first lesson for us to hear here is that Lord Chaitanya is saying, you know, I'm simply following the words of my spiritual master. We're all here simply following the words of our spiritual master. We want to please our spiritual master. So that's, in any sampradaya, that's the essence of spiritual life, to follow the words of our spiritual master. And as with the Mayavad philosophers, they would follow the words of their spiritual master. Here Lord Chaitanya was saying, I'm following the words of my spiritual master. So there was no nothing to contest about. There was all agreement. So that's a very good sign. So that was his first thing. And then the second thing he is really saying here is that my spiritual master considered me a fool. He simply chastised me. So he's really putting himself down even further, ready to speak in a way that will be attractive. So in the Mayavad line of sannyasis, they were also very strong and very hard on their brahmacharis. They would, they had to be very stern in how they acted so that they could perform properly. By the line that Lord Chaitanya came in, or in terms of his Ishwara Puri, was his spiritual master, he was a recognized, Puri is a title which is recognized within the Mayavadi context of sannyasis. So it's a laudable title. So whoever Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was initiated by, the fact that he was chastised by him and is following him and he was called a fool, it's a laudable thing. So really, before transforming the heart of Prakashananda Saraswati, Lord Chaitanya is really taking that humble role. And it really begs the question how, perhaps in our preaching, you know, if we really want to be smart, how we should approach people. First step almost to be in line, to be able to relate to them, relate to their line of thinking, and to be able to prepare the ground before we were able to inspire them for change. Interestingly enough, also, Lord Chaitanya's mode is not, again, challenging. It's very much, it's a very sort of subtle means of introducing what his teaching was. I won't go into the details of what he said, because that's next week's verse. But I wanted to really look at the purport we have here today. And there are a number of very, very interesting things we can learn from this particular purport. Here Srila Prabhupada explains that Lord Chaitanya presented himself as a number one fool in order to indicate that in the present age, Kali Yuga, is an age of fools and rascals in which it is not possible to obtain perfection simply by reading Vedanta philosophy and meditating. Obviously, the Mayavadi's practice was reading Vedanta and meditating, but Srila Prabhupada is very strongly saying that this is an age of Kali Yuga. Age of Kali Yuga means fools and rascals. We're really not cut out. No matter how much scholarly we want to be, we're not cut out for really studying literature and meditating and simply using that as a means to liberation. Certainly those things we should do, but they won't really get us our destination, our goal, allow us to obtain perfection. An age of fools and rascals. You know, if I was to say, how many of us consider ourselves fools and rascals? I'm sure most of us will feel shy to put our hand up. We don't really understand the meaning of a fool. And it's a very interesting sign, because we somehow material energy at the present time is so captivating. It just makes us forget what our true nature is. Really, very, very small, little, tiny living entities in the whole big picture of things, in the big universe, in the big, if we look at the whole spiritual and material sky, we're really very, very minute. But and material energy is so powerful, it just somehow makes us, just twists us slightly and makes us forget what who we really are. And that becomes the constant cause of much of our distress. So fools and rascals is what's being suggested here. I want to read a very interesting a section from the Bhagavatam, the first canto, Queen Kunti. And it's a purport to chapter 8, text 26. And Prabhupada's talking about the importance of the holy name and the attitude that we need to strive to carry. Srila Prabhupada: being materially advanced means taking birth in an aristocratic family and possessing great wealth, an education, and attractive personal beauty. All materialistic men are mad after possessing all of these material opulences, and this is known as the advancement of material civilization. But the result is that by possessing all of these material assets, one becomes artificially puffed up, intoxicated by such temporary possessions. Consequently, such materially puffed up persons are incapable of uttering the holy name of the Lord by addressing him feelingly. O Govinda, O Krishna. It is said in the Shastras that by once uttering the holy name of the Lord, the sinner gets rid of a quantity of sins that he is unable to commit. Such is the power of uttering the holy name of the Lord. There is not the least exaggeration in this statement. Actually, the Lord's holy name has such powerful potency. But there is a quality to such utterances also. It depends on the quality of feeling. I never noticed that line before. It depends on the quality of feeling. A helpless man can feelingly utter the holy name of the Lord, whereas a man who utters the same holy name in great material satisfaction cannot be so sincere. So, my dear Vaishnavas, I would like to ask you to meditate on that point for a second. When you sat this morning, or when you sit in your room uttering the holy names, your bead bag in hand, do you utter with great feeling? Or are you just uttering for the sake of uttering? Just think about that for a moment. This morning when you were chanting, were you chanting feelingly? Or were you chanting just because you were chanting? Any offers for feeling, well, any offers for those who are chanting for the sake of chanting? Very good. Few takers. I have to say, having lived in this house here for many years, once in the past, upstairs, I spent 4 years, and I caught a disease. Whilst I was in the Brahmachari ashram, I caught a disease. I caught a disease called complacency. And for the first 3 years, I didn't even know it. And for the fourth year, I really tried very hard. It was really difficult to nudge myself out of this complacent chanting. So, although we may be in a holy place, in the holy dharm, it's still possible for us to catch a bug or a disease of complacency, and we should always beware. Chanting feelingly. A helpless man can feelingly utter the holy name of the Lord, whereas a man who utters the same holy name in great material satisfaction cannot be so sincere. Sometimes we'll be in a very comfortable situation in life. And when we're very, very comfortable, it's very easy just to go for a stroll in our devotional service and not really capture the spirit of surrendering, of giving ourselves to Krishna. But when we're poor, when we're struggling for our meal, we always can be in that prayerful mood, striving to, just asking for surrender. I was reading a very very nice part of the Krishna book both my son and daughter like this part of the Radha Gopinanda Ki Jai, this part of the Krishna book. And it's when Krishna comes to Mathura, and first he comes to Mathura, and who does he meet first when Krishna arrives in Mathura? He's about to meet, obviously, Kamsa, but before he meets Kamsa, who's the first person he meets? Meets the washerman. And the washerman is full of... he asks for the clothes, and the washerman refuses. These are Kamsa's. How dare you ask for these clothes? And Krishna, I mean, it's a bit of a raw scene, I have to say, for reading Sri Lord sometimes, you know, Krishna has an argument and they just finishes him off straight away. But the spirit of the washerman is very aggressive and very challenging. And so once they finish their business with the washerman, the cowherd boys take some nice clothes and things, they move on. And then they, who's the next person they meet? Who do they meet after the washerman? But testing you. Who? Louder, please. Nope. Meet somebody else before then. Come on, brahmacharis. No. Akura was with them. He brought them. Not Kavalya Peter, no. He meets Sudama, who makes the garlands, the garland maker. And Sudama, by contrast to the washerman, his heart is full of devotion. And he's been waiting for a long time. He's making these garlands every day for the deities. As soon as Krishna arrives, he gets these quick garlands ready and he offers them to the Lord, both Krishna and Balaram. And his whole mood is totally different. In fact, it's interesting. I recently came to find out that he had in his previous life, in Ram's pastimes, in the Ramayana, had been waiting to please the Lord, but somehow the opportunity was taken from him, so he was given a blessing or a benediction that he would be able to offer his garland, make flowers to Krishna, garlands for Krishna. So it's a very small, they're both in Mathura, in a very holy place. One had one mentality, the other had another mentality. And we should check ourselves. Which mentality do I have? Am I like the washerman, progressive, challenging, or am I like Sudama, and always giving and loving? So, something to keep in mind. Again, we looked at the Mahabharata, and we that spirit. How do we capture that spirit? You know, the gambling match was there, and the five brothers had somehow, Yudhisthira somehow got captured by a little bit of it, a small desire. He had a small thread of this desire to play game. And somehow he was tested on it. And one thing, you know, led to another, and he'd lost his whole kingdom, he'd lost his brothers, lost everything. And he wasn't, you know, he was lost. And they drag in Draupadi, start to disrobe her. And Unadrobati's got nobody. She calls to her husbands. The husbands can't do anything. They've got their hands behind their back. They're tied up. They want to. You know, Bhim wants to scream and shout and help her, but they can't do anything. And she Govinda, Govinda. You know, she gives herself to Christ to Krishna. Christ to Krishna. And Krishna reciprocates. And, you know, the question is, will Krishna reciprocate with me when I call to him? When I chant, utter with feeling, devotion, Krishna, 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 will he reciprocate with me? Or what will it take for him to reciprocate with me? What sort of feeling do I need in my heart for him to reciprocate with me? Very important for us to ask that. And perhaps if we meditate on this idea that perhaps that I am a fool, and perhaps as a fool I'll be more in a desperate situation than when I think that I'm a scholar and I know my literature and I know my words and my books, will he reciprocate with me more if I go and approach him as a fool, more in a humble mood? Something we have to ask ourselves. What causes Krishna to reciprocate? How does he reciprocate? And how do I know if he's reciprocating? What's one sign for us to... a sign that indicates to us that maybe Krishna's reciprocating when we chant? Sorry? Sorry? Takes away everything. Okay. That could be one way. That's a blessing. But sometimes that doesn't come straight away. You know, that comes... some of us experience that. And it's a painful experience, but it's a wonderful experience when Krishna takes everything away. None of us really want to ask. Only Queen Kunti used to ask for, take everything away so I can remember you. But most of us don't want to ask for that. It's very painful. But it's a blessing. We're not talking about that right now. We're talking about in our chanting, in our daily chanting, how do you know if Krishna's reciprocating with us? Taste, actually. Taste is the thing. There's some taste. We feel some taste. We feel some enthusiasm. I've been doing a little study, I haven't finished it yet, on the word enthusiasm. And it's very interesting how Srila Prabhupada, in many places... I was reading a whole lot of letters, actually, where Prabhupada was saying that if you are strict and if you practice nicely and chant nicely, you will develop enthusiasm. And whether we call it enthusiasm or taste, there's a distinction, but they're very similar. Sometimes they may merge, but we will get taste. Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, if you perform devotional service nicely, you will get some taste. So by chanting nicely, there's some reciprocation. And we may get some taste, we may get some enlivenment, we feel like chanting more. And it's a very, again, it's a very nice nice blessing. And so it's chanting in that spirit. If you're chanting correctly, you'll increase that. If you're not chanting correctly, you'll be struggling and you'll be fighting and your mind will be wandering and all sorts of things. So those are some of the challenges of chanting. In fact, it's a very interesting, a little bit further on in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya goes to South India. And when he travels to South India, there's a very interesting part where Srila Prabhupada says that actually, when Lord Chaitanya went to the South, he was doing what he came for, distributing the holy name, which is something he couldn't do in Navadweep. And I thought, what a contradiction. He appeared in this world in Navadweep, but he couldn't really give the holy name in Navadweep. Why couldn't he give the holy name in Navadweep in the same way? What was stopping him? The scholars, and even the Mayavadis. You know, the scholars were there, and the mood was not right. But when he went to South India, he was just traveling, and his daily program was, he would get up, he would bathe, he would chant. He would be in ecstasy, he would meet people, he would embrace people, and they'd be transformed. He would walk on, he would chant more, he would embrace people. And that way he started transforming thousands of people. And people started to come to visit him, they started to meet him. They wanted to follow him. And he said, no, relax. You just stay at home, you chant Hare Krishna, and you become a spiritual, you teach others to chant Hare Krishna. When he went to the house of the Kurma Brahmana, he wanted to follow him. He wanted to leave home. He finally found something. He was enlivened. He was spiritually on fire. And he wanted to follow Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya said, no. He let him come and he said, no, you go back home. You go back home and then you teach. You teach others. You give others Krishna. So, really, he exemplified that. Harinama, 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 Evikilam, Kivilam. Just go out. There's no other way. There's no other way. Just give Krishna to others. In the there's a work called Prema Vivarta, and there's a very nice section in there. I just wanted to read a little passage from there, where where Lord Krishna is speaking to Arjuna. Krishna says, "O Arjuna, listen attentively. When the living entity chants my name, whether out of devotion or indifference, I never forget this act. It remains always close to my heart. There is no vow like chanting the holy name, no knowledge superior to it, no meditation which comes anywhere near it, and it gives the highest result. No penance is equal to it, and nothing is as potent or powerful as the holy name. Chanting is the greatest act of piety and the supreme refuge. Even the words of the Vedas do not possess sufficient power to describe its magnitude. Chanting is the highest path to liberation, peace, and eternal life. It is the pinnacle of devotion, the heart's joyous proclivity and attraction, and the best form of remembrance of the Supreme Lord. The holy name has appeared solely for the benefit of the living entities as the Lord and Master, the supreme worshipable object and the spiritual guide and mentor." Isn't that a nice meditation? Prema Vivarta. When we hear things like that, we feel enlivened. We want to improve our chanting. Let me read it again for you. And just capture it again. Really listen. Listen carefully. Sometimes I have to read things three times for it to sink in. Fools we are. "O Arjuna, listen attentively. When the living entity chants my name, whether out of devotion or indifference, I never forget this act. It remains always close to my heart. There is no vow like chanting the holy name, no knowledge superior to it, no meditation which comes anywhere near it, and it gives the highest result. No penance is equal to it, and nothing is as potent or powerful as the holy name. Chanting is the greatest act of piety and the supreme refuge." Forget that sometimes, I mean, refuge. "Even the words of the Vedas do not possess sufficient power to describe its magnitude. Chanting is the highest path to liberation, peace, and eternal life. It is the pinnacle of devotion, the heart's joyous proclivity and attraction, and the best form of remembrance of the Supreme Lord. The holy name has appeared solely for the benefit of the living entities, as the Lord and Master, the supreme worshipable object, and the spiritual guide and mentor." I think that says it all. If we're able to meditate on this and chant in that way, we will come much, much closer. And Krishna gives us, tells us here, chanting is for us, particularly the us fools of the Kali Yuga. It's for us, and it can really help us. So we have to push aside all the other distractions that are there in our lives and really focus on our chanting. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is my hero, and he, very nice little aspect from the Namastaka. "O holy name, O Lord Keshava, you dissipate the sufferings of your surrendered devotees caused by the offenses to the holy name. You possess the transcendental form of ecstatic beauty and bliss, and you appear as the embodiment of sublime joy for the residents of Gokul. You are therefore a fully spiritual entity of the same spiritual nature as the Vaikuntha planets. I offer my repeated obeisances unto you. So, important for us in our, if we struggle with our chanting, to really find meditations which assist us, find devotees which assist us, pray to Vaishnava saints to assist us when we chant in the morning, and really focus on that. Sometimes, if we're not careful, we will get waylaid. So these are little things to help us, just meditations to help us. One important thing that Rupa Goswami talks about in the Nectar of Instruction is that we should have three things really help us very much. Three qualities help us. A quality of determination, the quality of enthusiasm, and the quality of patience. Determination, enthusiasm, I should say determination, patience, and enthusiasm. First, we begin with determination. Although we say, it's often said, holy name is the thing for this age, it does require some effort. It does require some cultivation. I like walking. I like walking up hills. Just happens to be, I've got a body which likes walking up hills. But to walk up hills, it takes some effort. It requires some effort. So all of us have, some of us like to play an instrument. Some of us like to cook. Anything we do requires some effort. And then sometimes you can just throw a meal together, or you can just play something. But if we really want to become an expert, it requires some determination. And I know that when I have to really walk up hills, sometimes it's harder. And I really have to focus, and it means hard work. But if I work hard and the determination is there, I just have to be patient. I can't just read the stuff off the hill. If I'm cooking something, I can't have the final product just there and there straight away. It requires a little bit of patience. But once you persevere, then the enthusiasm comes. Because you start seeing bits of the result. And there's some Krishna reciprocates. So our chanting has to be very much like that. This is not a japa workshop today, but it's... I see the devotees forget. We become very, very casual practitioners in our devotional service, and really chanting is the heart. And this verse is all about the importance of chanting and why Lord Chaitanya came. So we have to really, again, find ways, become determined, be patient, but practice with enthusiasm. We have to persevere, and capture that spirit. It's fine. Yes, I had a really nice chanting day the other day. Perfect chanting. Everything went nicely. I was feeling on top of the hill. But then suddenly the following day it went down like this, and then went up and down. So the question is how to do it in a way that we're able to climb up and up and up closer to Krishna on our way to Goloka Vrindavan. That's the challenge. That's the challenge each one of us have. And if we're going to be casual in our practice, then it will take many lifetimes. It's a long journey. But question of how can I practice in a way that it's enlivening and it strengthens me and I can persevere. I read a very interesting, some interesting articles not long ago. Some devotees who decided that, I'm not going to just stick around and chant 16 rounds a day. This is Sunday morning. We've got devotees who are practitioners here. You're all sadhakas. So these were sadhakas, and they say, 16 rounds, it's nice, but Prabhupada would have liked us to chant more, if we can. Can I create a little bit more time in my day when I can chant more? So, one devotee said that she found that she had time in the evenings. She started chanting a little bit more. So from 16 rounds, they went to 18 rounds, and then went to 24 rounds, and then 32 rounds a day. Every day, 32 rounds. Now, wouldn't it be nice if we were able to chant 32 rounds every day? Yes, I know, I'm busy, I've got my service, I've got to do this, I've got my kids, so many things to do. But you know what? If we're determined, if we desire to do it, we will be able to do it. And it's really nice in a society where we have a lot of sangha, lots of devotees in the world. You'll find somebody who's doing something that you could benefit from. It's just a question of finding it. And you think, I think, I'll never be able to do it. But if you really look around, you'll find somebody on the other side of the world who's doing exactly what you're doing, but doing it much better, and doing 32 rounds and even more. Do I have the desire? Am I going to find a way to do it? If I do, Krishna will guide us. He will reciprocate. He will show us the way. And so I was politely, pleasantly surprised and inspired by the practice of several devotees who are chanting more than their regular. So I can say that I'm not quite there, but I am certainly aspiring for that. I'm certainly aspiring for that. Because if I can do that, I mean, I recall there was some instruction that we should be trying to remember Krishna 24 hours a day. We should be striving to chant 24 hours a day, one way or another. And if we can do that, and if we can see other examples, and if we desire it, I'm sure Radha Gokulanda will reciprocate with those desires and will help us and will guide us. So maybe not 32, but perhaps instead of 16, we may want to do 17 and perhaps 18. And maybe that's a good place to begin. And if that goes well, then we can go a little further. And then, you know, the consequence of that one extra or two extra rounds, that little extra effort, is a little bit more sweetness. When we chant Krishna's names, a little bit more sweetness than how Krishna reciprocates with us. So, my dear devotees, please strive a little bit to do that. Two things I wanted to read before we finish, just to share some other insights again on how we can really churn the nectar of the holy name. Obviously, there was a wonderful kirtan last night. We may be in the sangha of devotees and have nice kirtans. That enlivens us. But sometimes there are two things. Obviously, we you know, the process of Hare Krishna is we do it in the association of devotees. But also, it's very important to remember that we're each one of us very independent. Prabhupada used to talk about opening centers, opening temples in different places, and he didn't like this idea of a central body, central bureaucracy. He said that each temple should be independent. And why? Because he said it's important for each group of devotees to learn through their mistakes how to serve Krishna and how to run a center. And I, you know, it's very similar in our devotional service. You know, Sutapa's good chanting every morning won't benefit me, even if I, you know, spend time with him. I can't steal his benefit. Each one of us has to do our own work. And we have to be ready for that. We can do it in the association, but the association does inspire us to become strong ourselves. It's not that I can take the benefits of his chanting or somebody else's chanting. I mean, occasionally we may pray and we may say, look, I want to offer the benefit of my... One devotee came to me recently and she said, my daughter's been struggling so much. I've gone to Vrindavan and I'm chanting very hard, and I'm passing all my benefits for her so she can come close to Krishna. And I said, that's wonderful, that's laudable. But I'm sure the daughter can't say, I want your benefits, you know, you can't demand those. So we all have to, you know, walk our own path. That's really very important. And why am I saying that? The reason I'm saying that is that we have to make the effort. We have to put the energy in. Lost my point here. Anyway, I'll come back to it in a moment. What I wanted to read was the nectar of instruction. Very nice. Rupa Goswami, text 7. The holy name, character, pastimes, and activities of Krishna are all transcendently sweet like sugar candy. Although the tongue of one afflicted by the jaundice of ignorance, avidya, cannot taste anything sweet, it is wonderful that simply by carefully chanting these sweet names every day, a natural relish awakens within the tongue, within his tongue, and his disease is gradually destroyed at the root. I really get inspired whenever I read this verse, because it just tells us, you know, no judgment. You just continue doing it very carefully. If you chant very carefully, even if it takes you 15 minutes to chant one round, just chant very carefully and nicely, listening to every word, you will gradually develop a taste. And that taste is a good, it's an indicator that you're going in the right direction. The more you do, the more taste, the more you do. Don't let your ego come in the way. Put your ego aside and carry on. And that way you can chant well. You can chant nicely. And we can move forward. And I wanted just to end with just share a meditation of Satchinandan Swami. And he's a master for giving direction on all the challenges we face on our journeys on chanting, on our daily chanting. And he gave this very nice example where sometimes, you know, our mind is like this, where we're flying, but it flies off in one direction or flies off in another direction. You know how airplanes actually work? If I wanted to go from London to New York, because the winds are very strong, the airplane gets pushed this way or that way. So the pilot's constant job is to realign, to realign, to realign, so that it reaches the destination that he's striving for. And our minds are similar. In the morning, we veer off here, we veer off there, we veer off somewhere else. But our job, that's us, I mean the spirit soul, our job is just to constantly realign ourselves, to consciously realign ourselves and find the path back. So I find that a very inspiring example, because it is like that. We struggle, we meander on our path, we become casual practitioners. So I'm going to start a society in the future, a society for against casual practitioners of Krishna consciousness. We want to become dynamic preachers. We want to be dynamic practitioners, not just casual practitioners. We have to fight against that. And that takes some effort. So there I'd like to stop. Thank you very much. Any questions, any comments?